This is Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Ryan Warner. On the day the sequester has become a reality, we sit down with Governor John Hickenlooper at the Capitol. We're also going to talk about a recommendation that people who don't live in Colorado should be allowed to come in and buy marijuana here legally. That came from a task force that just wrapped up its work. And of course, we'll address gun bills, which so far have dominated this legislative session. Governor, it's nice to see you again.
Nice to be back.
A major federal deadline has come and gone. Congress failed to avert the massive spending cuts known as the sequester. The White House estimates Colorado stands to lose $85 million in federal funds this year. Those cuts hit everything from teachers of children with disabilities to meals for poor seniors, work-study jobs for college kids. As your staff works on the next budget, are there programs that you're prepared to backfill with state money?
Well, it's hard to backfill anything these days just because over the last couple of years, we've made so many cuts in the state budget already.
Backfilling your own cuts, let alone the federal ones, right?
Exactly. Additional cuts will be very difficult to backfill. Not that we can't do it. And obviously, we're going to try and address this on the basis of priority. You know, who are the last and least? Who are the people that can least afford to see a further cut? And which of those cuts have additional unintended consequences?
Sort of reverberations in the economy.
Right, exactly.
So, where would you look to that?
Well, one thing is low-income families, TANF recipients who get child care.
Temporary aid to needy families.
Right. And yeah. So oftentimes when they lose their child care, they are unable to continue working. Part of the big problem with this entire sequester issue is that it was intended as something that was so awful that no one would ever let it pass. This is just one fell swoop.
The Recreational Marijuana Task Force you created has wrapped up its work. Its mission was to tackle some of the big questions around regulation, and I want to ask you about some specific policies the task force is recommending. One is that people from out of state be allowed to buy marijuana in Colorado. Is this state about to become a center for pot tourism?
No, certainly won't be a center for pot tourism, and we'll do everything we can to limit that. You know, we're in a difficult position. Can you imagine if we said only citizens could buy pot? I mean, that's almost impossible to enforce and creates a huge set of conflicts.
When you say that Colorado is not going to become a pot tourist destination, is that sort of a hope, or is that what gives you the confidence to say that's not the case?
Well, I'm not a visionary to be able to see in the future, but it certainly wasn't the intention of the people that wrote the bill. It's not the intention of the committee, but this is the box you find yourself in. You know, I'm more worried about, are we going to have sufficient revenue to regulate it, to make sure that kids don't get access to pot?
Well, when it comes to kids and pot, the task force tried to tackle this a number of ways, strictly limiting advertising, encouraging increased anti-marijuana education.
Well, how are they going to pay for the increased anti-marijuana education? The real challenge is how do we make sure we have the resources? Look at homeless teenagers, right? We have a serious problem. But almost certainly there are going to be more kids that, for one reason or another, get derailed and end up, you know, on the streets because of legalization.
So some people hear that and think that's a little reefer madness, that marijuana is going to lead to homeless kids.
Well,
but what do you see a pattern there?
I'm going to say most of those people haven't worked with homeless kids. A lot of them have real issues with, you know, their own self-image, their security, and marijuana can distort those sense of relationships. It's not a surprise. I'm not saying the sky's falling, that we're going to have tens of thousands, but I don't think it's unreasonable to think that you're going to have hundreds more.
People who may have voted for Amendment 64 might think, well, gosh, I sure read something in that amendment that, it generates taxes, and why would state government be somewhat strapped?
Well, the way the amendment was written, it suggests that the first $40 million of tax revenue that comes in gets used for the BEST program, which is not for teachers. It's just for school buildings around the state. And there's a lot of question whether we'll even get to $40 million.
And if there's not enough money, what then?
If there's not enough money, then you have to figure out, all right, can we get it from somewhere else? But as I've said, been saying to you for the last few months, there ain't anywhere else, right? We don't have any hidden pools of money.
You're listening to Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner, and we're at the state capitol with Democratic Governor of Colorado, John Hickenlooper, for our regular conversation. When Amendment 64 passed, legalizing recreational marijuana, it looked like that issue might dominate this legislative session. But lawmakers have barely talked about drugs so far. They're focused on guns. Let's talk about a couple of the proposals that may end up on your desk. Last week, you told our Capitol reporter Megan Verlee that you hadn't made up your mind on a bill to limit the size of ammunition magazines. This week, you said you would sign that bill. What made up your mind on magazines?
What I'd said before, and I don't think I've gone back and forth on this, that the bill as presented is something that would have a material effect. So if you look at the 62 mass murders we've had in the last 30 years, 31 of them were committed with high-capacity magazines. There's studies out now that demonstrate that 31 to 41% of the police officers who are killed in the line of duty are killed with high-capacity magazines. I mean, you talk to police chiefs pretty much all over the country, and they are generally universally in favor of this.
On to another gun proposal. Senate President John Morris wants to hold parties responsible who never fire a weapon in a crime. So the maker of some types of rifles, the sellers, someone who may own the firearm but lost track of it. Fundamentally, do those parties have some responsibility in a legal sense?
Well, it depends on what he's trying to do, I think. He's talking about this for assault rifles. So rather than banning assault rifles, what he's proposing as an alternative is to say, all right, so we don't ban it, but let's look that there's going to be a greater level of responsibility because these are such lethal weapons and have been used frequently for mass killings.
And is that the right path? Is that the right avenue?
Well, I think it's an alternative to people that don't want to have an outright ban.
Fundamentally, though, do manufacturers and sellers of guns have some responsibility in a crime committed with that firearm?
Well, I think that's what he's trying to determine, is whether there is a way. I haven't seen any writing on this, so I can't opine on exactly how the responsibility is measured and at what levels it comes down from one generation to the next.
It sounds like it's too early for you to comment specifically on whether you'd support this approach. Okay.
One other thing I think that's worth pointing out, that the universal background check, which is being debated so hotly, we're the one state that I'm aware of that we actually went and did the study. I mean, 5,000 background checks, and people say that criminals, they're too smart. They're not going to go through a background check. So of the 5,000 stops, and again, out of 340,000 gun purchases we had, 5,000 were actually blocked. And those included 420 people that had restraining orders on them, 38 people that had either been accused or convicted of homicide. These are dangerous people, and that's just the background checks that we've been doing through the gun shops. So if we do a universal background check, without question, we will apprehend more dangerous people.
And these numbers are over what span of time?
In 1 year. If this is in 2012. This is real data.
Governor, last week, Democratic Senator Michael Johnston unveiled a massive proposal to overhaul how the state finances education. And it's all predicated on voters passing a tax increase in the $1 billion range. In the past, you've said the public isn't ready for higher taxes. I'm sure supporters of this bill will want your help. Are you prepared to campaign for the tax increase if it makes it onto the ballot?
Well, as it's been laid out to me, it's not $1 billion. It's less than $1 billion. And we've sort of been referring to it as a grand bargain. And what he's done is he's gone out and talked to school districts, the teachers union, and he's tried to look at a comprehensive way of examining exactly what places we could make improvements. So issues around the balanced school day, in other words, being able to have, in most cases, a longer school day, but that has art in it and has physical exercise in it, longer school year for lower-income communities. 20 extra days of school can have a remarkable ability of helping the lowest-income communities really stay even with the middle-class peers. What Senator Johnson has done is saying, all right, what he's trying to do is get back to the same level of funding. If you account for inflation and student enrollment, we're about $1 billion, maybe a little less than $1 billion behind where we were 5 years ago. He wants to get back to where we were 5 years ago, but not just to go back to where it didn't really work as well as we wanted to 5 years ago. He wants to say, all right, if we all work together, we all make these compromises, we can end up with a set of school reforms that put Colorado as the number one public education state in America.
I have to say, the enthusiasm in your answer may be your answer, which is to say, you sound like you're on board with this. I am picturing it right now. You're jumping out of an airplane, parachuting out of an airplane, as you did in a former ad in support of public education.
Let me tell you, that will not happen.
Let me ask just
I hope.
Very clearly, will you support it if it makes it to the ballot?
Well, it's too early to say that. I mean, it's the devil's in the details, and the legislation is not finalized yet. But if it has all those elements in it, then I think it becomes a model of how states can work together. And by that I mean all the invested parties can work together to really make sure that kids come first.
Last question for you. The U.S. Supreme Court has turned down the final appeal for Nathan Dunlap, sentenced to death for killing four people at a Chuck E. Cheese restaurant in Aurora. This is 20 years ago. You and I have talked about the death penalty, but with a clemency petition likely to land on your desk, have you decided, will you allow the execution to proceed?
You know, I haven't decided, and we talk about it. I mean, there's not a week that goes by that we don't have several discussions about it.
Who have you talked to among, I'm thinking Mr. Dunlap or his family or families of the victims? Are they all part of the conversation?
You know, I'm trying to look at it right now from a larger perspective of how should a state think about the death penalty? I mean, is it something that genuinely makes your state safer? And what I'm trying to look at now is to look at how many places have we not asked for it, where the circumstances were just as heinous, just as malevolent and evil as in Nathan Dunlap. And if that's true, are we really meeting out justice?
Are you meeting out justice with some consistency?
Exactly. Yeah. So is it more fair for some than others? Does it matter who the district attorney is where you committed your crime? Does it matter what school you went to or where you grew up?
Governor, thank you for being with us.
You bet.
Democrat John Hickenlooper is Colorado's governor. Let's take a break and then parse words with our state capitol reporter Megan Verlee. She'll tell us about the end of a perennial debate in the legislature over the difference between must and shall. This is Colorado Matters.